is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello, I'm Chris Stafford, and our topic for this week's podcast is helmet safety. Joining me to discuss this is Roy Burrick, who is the Managing Director of Charles Owen, who have been a sponsor of the USEA now for about 10 years. And he joins me now from, I think, their factory in the Midlands in England.
That's right. Good afternoon to you, Chris.
And I think, first of all, we should look at the products that you offer for the eventing community, because you have so many different designs, don't you?
Yes, we do want helmets that are specific for the different parts of the eventing discipline. We have the 4-star, which is our flagship product, which has 4 international safety standards on it, as well as producing helmets which can be customized to go into the somebody's attire and make them look that much more confident and therefore much more impressive when they're doing the dressage phases.
So in terms of the crash helmet then, for cross-country helmet, this is a design that's been so popular for years and worn by so many of the USEA membership. Tell us a little bit about the different options that you have for the cross-country and for show jumping and dressage.
Well, the 4-star is the one that we would be recommending for anybody doing the cross-country, because with the rotational fall being something that most people are very wary of, that one has an advanced Kevlar shell built into it and has the highest crash testing in the Snell standard. But if you are wanting something a little bit slimmer, then the Pro 2 and J3 are two popular options. For the show jumping and dressage phase, we have the Air 8, which is well known, worn by many show jumping and dressage riders at the various highest level. And we've just launched the V8, which is a little bit more dressy and allows the inside to be removed for washing and allows you to have, especially in the hotter parts of the US, allows you to have a fresh helmet every time you go on your riding.
There's also, as a result of the injuries, there's a lot more statistics available, aren't there? Let's talk about those recent statistics and what they're telling you in the manufacturing industry now. What messages you're getting back from those statistics?
That's where we've been focusing most of our research. I mean, there's been incredible change in the amount of helmet usage and the number of rules that have been put in. And also, we have been developing helmets to meet the various standards that have also been increasing by, 30% and 40%. So one would expect, looking at the statistics, that the number of people turning up at hospital and the people suffering concussion would be dropping off. But it was, and we were never quite sure, because when we look at statistics, we are not necessarily seeing that message. And so therefore, I really felt that I needed to start to try and understand what we could do to try and put in today's helmet that would actually be ready for the standards that I'm sure that we're going to be developing for tomorrow. We also see from some studies that actually the construction, there was a bicycle helmet study done in Seattle at Harborview, where they were looking at bicycle helmets and trying to identify, was there any characteristics of helmets that actually reduced injury to the head and the brain? And they published some surprising information that the construction of the helmet, the more rigid the outer shell of the helmet, it appeared to provide better protection to the head. And when they're meeting similar standards, there's obviously something that standards are not necessarily addressing. And that's what we really wanted to look at. Now, when you're looking at this area, engineers are very accomplished at looking at breakage, so therefore skull fracture, brain bleeds and things like that. But when you look at concussion, anybody that's had one and gone to a hospital, they do a CT scan or they do an MRI scan, and the doctors say, it's clear, there's nothing to see, because they look for breakage. Now, we're understanding now that concussion is really where the brain is being poisoned by a chemical imbalance caused by a knock to the head. And what we need to understand is, what can we do within a helmet to reduce the effects of that poison? But also, more importantly, we're discovering is, what can the rider do to actually prepare themselves for a blow to the head and reduce the effects of concussion? That the research is really showing a dual effect. And whilst we can improve helmets, we also are very conscious to tell people that they can do something for themselves.
And what could they do then, Roy?
Well, it's what the areas that we're seeing is, for example, when you have this chemical imbalance that induced in the head from a blow, what the body needs to do is to pump the chemicals back into the out of the neurons in the inside, back in the right places. And to do that, it needs energy. Now, one of the things that people always will tell you if you've had a bad concussion is you need to rest. Well, that rest is total rest, because if you are I'm bored, I'm going to stay at home, and you read a book or you go on the computer, you catch up with Facebook, you do computer games, that's actually not rest, because your brain is using energy to process that information. What you want to do is to make sure that all the energy that's available is being utilized by the part of your brain that needs repairing by pumping these chemicals. So firstly, hydrating, keeping well hydrated, allows the blood to be able to deliver the energy to the cells more effectively. We're also seeing that vitamin D is very important in stopping inflammation. And of course, a lot of the medical advice out there is to protect against skin cancer and to put a lot of sunscreen on. Vitamin D is generated by sunshine, and in fact is using the UVA rays, which of course is the one that sunscreen is most effective at blocking out. And so sometimes what we can be doing is protecting ourselves against skin cancer, but actually reducing our vitamin D levels. So whilst, sunscreen is definitely effective, and I'm not prescribing people stop using it, it's also being aware that you might actually need to be supplementing your vitamin D level. And that can be either through supplements, or you can definitely get it from oily fish. And we see that very much in the northern parts of Europe, where the diet tends to be higher in herring and salmon and things like that, because they don't have the sunshine during the winter months. The other thing with vitamin D is also trying to make sure you have some magnesium as well to go into it. The other thing is exercise. Exercise, in all the studies, and in many ways I feel that there's been some studies of head injuries against professionals and amateurs. And when I'm talking about exercise, I'm talking about vigorous exercise, something that really gets the heart racing. There's a number of studies that do three things. One is vigorous exercise gets storage of glucose at the cellular level built up. And that can, and vigorous exercise can increase the local storage by 50 or 60% above normal levels. And so It's important if we're actually looking at the brain repairing itself. If you've actually got local stores of glucose, then that means you're not relying on the blood to pump the energy into the local thing, and so the pumps can be that much more effective. We also see that exercise is extremely effective at increasing one of the most powerful antioxidants that the body has. Of course, when we actually exercise and use the pumps, we actually have a byproduct of the mitochondria inside our cells is to produce reactive oxygen. Now, we deal with that reactive oxygen by having antioxidants that mop up them and stop them actually causing problems. Now, when you have a trauma to the head and the brain, these pumps are going full blast, and they produce a lot of this reactive oxygen. If from exercise you can actually get, you can increase your levels of antioxidants at the cellular level, it means that you don't actually have the ability of the reactive oxygen to attack the membranes and break down the neurons. And then finally, exercise has been shown to produce a chemical called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And this particular compound has been identified as something that makes the brain sprout. So therefore, if you've got an injury that actually is killing off the brain cells, then having another factor which actually is going to come in that will actually start regeneration. And so whilst from a concussion, the first effect is you need to stop doing anything. You need to allow the pumps to rebalance the chemicals. After you've actually recovered from that and the repair's done as much, the next thing that will actually help your brain recover is actually exercise, vigorous exercise, that will start rebuilding that and start regeneration in your head.
Having suffered from a concussion, you need that rest period, obviously, and we know that riders are typically not very good at resting, even when they're under medical orders. So complete rest to give yourself a chance to recover from the trauma of that concussion. But at what point then, is that a doctor's decision then, Roy, as to when you've recovered enough to begin this vigorous exercise again?
I think definitely. I mean, if one was able, what you find is when you get a concussion, actually your glucose levels drop in the brain, the utilization of glucose. And in fact, what happens is the uptake of lactate. Now, it seems really weird because, of course, normally we associate lactate build up in muscles with pain and inflammation. But in fact, in the brain, lactate is full of carbon atoms that can be stripped down by the mitochondria into high numbers of fuel cells. So it appears the brain says glucose is not efficient enough. I'm actually going to take lactate out of the brain, out of the blood. And so when we look at the metabolism, we see glucose drop, lactate increase, and then when the brain repairs itself, lactate drops and glucose starts to come back up again. So the trouble is how does one know this without going into a brain scan? I'm not sure, but certainly I think when the symptoms are over, and if you do impact testing, you've started to come back to recover from that, but certainly seeking medical advice about when you should seek vigorous exercise. And so it's not stretching, it's not doing yoga, it's something that actually is getting the heart beating.
Yes, and it can be a bit of a grey area, can't it? You know, because often riders can be in denial. They're so impatient to get back on the horse that they'll kind of ignore some symptoms that could be the tail end of concussion, but you're not completely over it.
Well, yes, and in fact, there was a very interesting experiment done on some rats. A lot of brain research is done on these particular animals. And what they did was they actually did an impact onto the brain that affected a limb, which actually stopped it being able to be used. And so they first of all had a group of rats that would actually go through, and then at the end of their life they would look at the damage to that particular area. They then took another group, did exactly the same, and what they did was they actually tied up one of the good limbs, so it forced the rat to use one of the injured limbs that were being controlled by the injured brain. Oh, sorry, the good limbs that was not active because of the injured brain. And this is like, for example, people not resting. And they found that the amount of damage to the brain by forcing the rat to use it was huge. Was a really significant lesions and death of the neurons. And then what they also did, they did a third experiment where they actually waited a week before they actually forced the rat to actually use the bad limb. And they found that the amount of cell death was significantly, the amount of cell death had reduced, but actually some of the lesions on the brain area actually still were there. So often, you know, the 2 to 3 weeks rest period doesn't seem too far away from what we should be expecting. Obviously, the thing with rats is their brain is a different size and they do have a different metabolism. And sometimes in humans, it can be much longer. But the idea of actually increasing your heart rate, you know, once you're symptom-free, increasing your heart rate and seeing if the symptoms come back is a good way to try and assess whether you're fully recovered or not. But again, working with a medical professional is always advised to get the best results.
What would you say to people who still get on a horse and even they're just going for a hack and just don't wear a helmet?
There's two aspects. One is, you know, if you have a brain injury, it really puts the stress, a huge stress, on all the people around you. The people that that actually have to care for you, and if you go on the Riders for Helmet website, you can see many, many distressing stories about, you know, a head injury sometimes makes you aggressive. It can actually break up family relationships because the brain injured person just becomes so much more aggressive to all the people that love them. And so if you think about the effect on your immediate friends and family, you know, that is a really good reason to wear a helmet. But if one's going slightly wider than that, we think that the benefits of the horse on a human are huge and immense. It really can be a life-changing experience. And one of the problems we have is that parents sometimes feel that horse riding is too dangerous when they hear stories of people being injured in the newspaper and things like that. So every time there's one of these scare stories, it actually stops. There's some parent somewhere telling their daughter or son that they really are unhappy about them having a relationship with a horse. And so That's the wider effect, that we stop people coming into the sport and we stop people enjoying the horse like we know it.
Yes, well, very good advice indeed, Roy. And as always, we're enormously grateful for your support here at the USEA. And of course, we'll direct the listeners to your website at charlesowen.com. And we can always find you at trade stands over here and distributors right across the country.
Well, certainly we have a wide range of tech stores. Possibly in the Midwest, we do struggle, and especially when you're looking at the more specialist headgear for cross country, it's not as easily available. But at events, it's a great place that you can find specialists, and we do do as much training as we can, because having a correctly fitting helmet is a really important part of maximizing the safety for the user.
Absolutely. Well, very good advice, Roy. As always, thank you very much indeed for your support and for coming on the show this week. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we think the USAA do an amazing job.
And to find out more about the full range of Charles Owen helmets, please visit their website at charlesowen.com. Be sure to visit the website regularly for notices of upcoming events, including the Future Event Horse and Young Event Horse Educational Seminar, which takes place at Longwood Farm in Ocala, Florida, on February 24th and 25th. You can listen to this podcast on the website at useventing.com or at usea.podbean.com, and you can also download it to your smartphone or MP3 player at iTunes. Until the next time, enjoy your eventing.